Welcome to The People Show with Bik Nizar and Randeep Janda.
What is up? Welcome to The People Show. An hour earlier game time, we step up a bit earlier. Bik Nizar, Randeep Janda here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. If you want to chime in, as always, 650 onto the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, and 604-280-0650 if you wanted to grab a phone line. Full show today on The People Show. We got Irfan Ghaffar coming up in about a half hour. Ron McLean will join us at 1:30. Hockey Day in Canada, Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada, coming up this Saturday on a Canucks game day as well. We'll talk to Ron McLean, and we'll also talk to Adnan Virk, as we do on Thursdays from the NHL and MLB Network. Randy, what's going on?
What's going on, Bik? This is a little bit of a change. 1 hour makes a huge difference in the day, but as you mentioned, we got a jam-packed show, man. I'm looking forward to the conversations today. We're going to talk about tonight's game, but as always, trade speculation. I love trade speculation.
It just so happens that there's 31 other teams that have interests in making trades as well, and other teams can report interests around the league. It doesn't just happen here in Vancouver, so we'll get to that one later on here in the first segment. But yeah, it is a game day. Another chance for the Canucks to pick up 2 points, climb back into this playoff race, and some good news. A couple of players back in the team. Garland and Halak off of protocol. You'll see Connor Garland tonight in the lineup on a line with Elias Pettersson and Nils Höglander. A massive bump for the Vancouver Canucks to get some goal scoring back into the lineup. That's the big thing, is they've done good stuff at 5-on-5, Randeep, but they just haven't had finishers. They haven't had creative players to either create easier chances or to have that little bit of quality to just bury down chances. Connor Garland brings that to the Vancouver Canucks tonight.
He definitely does, and he brings that tenacity. Okay, when I think of this line, and this is something that, you know, we've talked about in the lead up to the season of, okay, what could this look like? Garland and Höglander are spark plugs. Who's the engine of the Canucks forward group when everything is good? It's Elias Pettersson. He needs a spark, an additional spark to raise his game. The two spark plugs on that line, I like it. This is kind of maybe an automotive theme I'm going with, but I think Garland and just what he brings, and the Canucks have missed that. Obviously the scoring touch, but even beyond that, just that level of, you know, that next level of bringing it every shift. And Nils Höglander, he's got his flaws in his game right now. I think Bruce Boudreau has talked about the defensive side of things. And if you want to be a 20-goal scorer in this league, you're going to have to play some defense. If you're a 40-goal scorer, your defensive maybe inability or maybe that side of the game can be ignored a little bit. But, you know, he's going to show something. But one thing he does bring is he brings that tenacity as well. So can both of these guys combine to continue what Elias Pettersson has started here and continue to maybe build off some good vibes? The team as a whole hasn't been able to pick up those results, mostly because a lot of absences. But I'm curious to see how this line looks, especially as Pettersson is now starting to get going as well. What kind of effect can those two wingers provide him?
I've mentioned before, the Pettersson-Garland combo to me really, really excites me. You think of the way Garland plays the game and you think of the way Pettersson thinks the game. It is a lot of putting defenders in stress in ways you don't always see, right? Garland likes to do, you know, spin around in the corners, make it difficult, change directions a lot, and manipulate defenders into, you know, putting them in spots where they don't want to be. Elias Pettersson, you know, cerebral, thinks the game, can drag guys out of position. And there can be a certain creativity between them that I don't know if has got enough runway completely to really harness that and really, you know, build a foundation of what that chemistry can be. But I'd like to see them get a run of games here consistently, because I do think that pairing can look really well. And I think the game that kind of I look to is that Nashville game when Pedersen had to play with Podkolzin and Hoglander, and you just saw the tempo go all through Elias Pettersson. That's what I'd like to see tonight from Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, that's something that I think when you look at, you know, their time playing together, both Pettersson and Garland 5-on-5, you know, they've essentially had about, what, 170 minutes thus far this year. And for the most part, that has been, you know, they haven't necessarily controlled, you know, they've been even on shots, which is good. But beyond that, like, I think there's another level here, because when you talk about the way that Pettersson plays, we've seen, especially during that stretch with Garland, when he played with him for the most part, like, that wasn't Pettersson with the type of confidence we've seen of late. And that goal against Mikko Koskinen, the placement on that shot, Mikko Koskinen can't make that save with his elbow. He can't make that, you know, save with his shoulder. So that confidence, to me, I think, is different from what we saw both of these guys play together a little bit earlier on in the year. I'm really interested. I think the Hoglander aspect, it's kind of the reality of what Hoglander is right now. Some nights he's going to be given the confidence from Bruce Boudreau, but it's also a, all right, show me what you got tonight. And if you don't bring it, we're going to move you off that line. It's kind of the world that Hoglander lives in right now. It's a bit of a purgatory, right? Like, where, hey, you're going to be given a chance, but if not, we're going to move you down a little bit. With Pettersson and Garland, that to me is the duo that has a lot of potential. And the way that they play, the amount of space that maybe Connor Garland can create for an Elias Pettersson, I think we're going to see the best aspect of that coming forward here. Hopefully it stretches beyond this Winnipeg game, maybe against Calgary as well. But you got to start with this one, because in theory, both of these guys should be able to, you know, work well together. I think we're going to see a real representation of that starting tonight, more so than we've seen in the past.
650-650, if you want to chime in with your thoughts on the lineup tonight, how it looked. But Colson, Miller, Besser skated together. Hoglander, Pettersson, Garland. Of course, you know, the quote-unquote second line. Mott, Lamico, Highmore. And then Bailey, Dickinson, Chason played together. OEL, Myers, Hughes, and Poolman. And Brad Hunt with Luke Shen. And Spencer Martin, your goalie for tonight. That, you know, seeing Podkolzin and Hoglander put in those positions, given the way the usage has been in recent games, not entirely surprising, because you're no longer loading up a one line, right? You have Miller and Pettersson able to go down the middle, and seeing those guys go back into top six roles, you know, it's best for what their talents are. I'm also curious how long we see this, just given the way the minutes have been allocated here in recent games. You know, we've talked about, you know, a show of trust and being able to continue your development. And if you play with the lead, different story. If you get behind and have to chase the game, I'm curious how Podkolzin and Hoglander's minutes are a reflection of that.
Yeah, especially looking at the opposition tonight as well, right? Like, you look at that forward group of two really solid lines from the Winnipeg Jets, Scheifele and Pierre-Luc Dubois playing down the middle. You've got a pretty strong top six there. We've talked about that as well. And, you know, Cole Perfetti's done a decent job at the NHL level. The kid looks good. So when you talk about distribution of minutes, I think there will be an adjustment when it comes to Hoglander and Podkolzin. We already expect that when it comes to the special team side of things. But, you know, Lamico, Mott, Highmore, this is another game where they play that matchup role, right? Like,
yep.
This is another game where you're probably looking at them playing maybe, what, the second highest, you know, minutes, potentially 5-on-5, depending on how this game plays out. You know, but I see that matchup role as how do you contain the Winnipeg Jets? And especially if that second line is going with Kyle Connor, Pierre-Luc Dubois, and Cole Perfetti. So I'm with you. Those wingers, it's exciting to see that on paper. It's exciting to see what happens. But how does that play out? A, how long of a leash do they have? And B, how does that, we want to say in quotation marks, third or fourth line, essentially, are they utilized yet again as a second line? That, to me, especially looking at the competition tonight, I think that's the reality. Lamico, Mott, and Highmore have been a preferred, you know, trio based on especially the level of competition. I expect that to continue tonight, looking at the opposition.
If you had to make bets tonight, Randeep, and our listeners, 650, yep. 650, if you had to make bets on how many guys can you guarantee will get, let's say, 14, 15 minutes of ice time, how many fours can you guarantee get that amount? I say Miller, Besser, Pettersson, Garland, and then Mott, Lamico, Highmore. Like, It's those seven that I feel confident will get strong minutes, and game situation will dictate the rest. But like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Mott, Lamico, Highmore line stays intact with the course of 60 minutes, and then you play around with the four of Miller, Besser, Pedersen, Garland, and maybe load up that line sometimes, get that Mott, Lamico, Highmore line out, and then, you know, reallocate as you go through the course of the game.
Bic, look at the last five games for Juho Lamico specifically. 15, 16, 19, almost 20 minutes in a game. 16 and 17. And I understand the Canucks were missing some pretty important pieces in some of those games, JT Miller mm-hmm. most notably. But there is a confidence in that line. And even a player that a lot of people in the Canucks fandom, and even the coach after the first game, couldn't really name this player. But there is a confidence in the style of game that they play. And from an offensive perspective, yes, you're not going to have that same sort of production that you did on the East Coast swing where Tyler Mott, Juho Lamico, Matthew Heimer were picking up points, but there is a confidence in, okay, these guys can play the defensive side of the game. And when we talk about, you know, the fluctuation in Podkolzin and Hoglander, specifically Hoglander, and why that ice time has not been there, maybe the confidence has not been there, he's potentially in the doghouse a little bit as well, is, hey, the defensive side of things. And Bruce Boudreau has said as much. So, you know, that's something the fourth line does bring. But I think a part of this is also, where's that best fit for a Nils Höglander, right? As he's trying to figure out that game, as he's trying to get better as an NHLer, which is natural when you are this young. He's 21 years of old. You're not going to be a ready-made NHLer. But what, you know, what line are you, a fixture on at this point in time? And I think in previous years, especially last year, you know, we did see Nils Höglander really gel with, you know, whether it was, you know, the Pearson and Horvat line. But now this year, he's kind of looking back and are trying to find that new fit. Because when you look at the duos, Miller-Besser is a consistent one. Pedersen-Garland is a consistent one as well. So where do you fit? Is it next to Bo Horvat? Is that, you know, is that Höglander's spot? Or is he looking in a completely different role? So I think this is a bit of a... There's probably a bit of a check on the identity and seeing, okay, where does Höglander fit? And that's why tonight is important, because you're saying, all right, Garland and Pedersen are good, but you're still trying to find out, okay, this guy's still wandering around trying to find his best fit at the center position.
And you can say, though, about someone like Brock Besser as well, right?
True.
It's, you know, where is his game right now? I know Bruce Boudreau brought his name up earlier today, and he's stressed about scoring goals and all that sort of stuff, but it's... It's the constant chase for consistency, and every athlete battles with this, and that's why we sit here and have these conversations about evaluating players and how fans feel about players, because when guys are consistent, you know, it leaves the evaluation to be a lot easier. I use Tyler Mott as the example all the time. Tyler Mott's very, very consistent. We can debate how much value that brings to the lineup and what goal scoring prowess he does and how much he actually moves the needle. But every time Tyler Mott goes over the board, you know exactly what you're going to get. Coaches know exactly what he's going to get every single time Tyler Mott skates on the ice. And you're by and large going to get like a consistent 6.5, 7 out of 10 performance a lot of the time from Tyler Mott. And then when he scores, okay, boosts up to 8.5, 9, all that sort of stuff. But you're always going to get a consistent performance. Guys like Höglander, Besser right now, Podkolzin, it varies, man. They have the ceiling to clip in a 9 out of 10 game all the time. But you also see 4 out of 10,
yep.
3 out of 10s. And that's the constant battle for consistency is what plagues every single athlete.
Oh, for sure, and especially at that age group, right? When you're trying to figure out, hey, you are a pro player, but what's your niche? How are you going to stay in the lineup for those 15 minutes or those 14 minutes? What do you do better than everybody else or among the best? And I think Nils Höglander's in that spot right now that he's trying to figure that out. He's trying to figure out what's going to keep him in the lineup, not only in the lineup, but what's going to keep him in the top six, I think, is the real question with him.
Bic Nizar and Randy Janda here on the People Show. Also here from Jamie Dodd from the Canucks Hour with Thomas Tran. Subscribe to the podcast, both the Canucks Hour, the People Show, and you know what? Add in Canucks Central and Halford and Pruff as well. Make it part of your daily rotation. You can catch up on what's happening on all of the shows and all the latest interviews. Patrick Alvin yesterday on Canucks Central with Sat and Dan. Go check out everything that's happening. Around the league, though, or at least outside of this city, Randy, there is interest in JT Miller, which we know. We very much know that there's interest in JT Miller. We've talked about it quite a bit. Today, though, in the New York Post, Larry Brooks, Brooksy, talking about the Rangers' supposed interest in JT Miller. And the quote is, "We are told that Vancouver GM Jim Rutherford's asking price for the one-time Ranger is astronomical at this point, but the ask is surely to drop as the deadline approaches if the Canucks entirely drop out of the race." So, a couple of things. I'm not sure the ask has to drop because the Canucks drop out of the race. Again, we've talked about this. They control the whole process, given that there's a whole nother year in this contract. But it is interesting that the price is astronomical, Randy.
That's exactly what you want to hear if you're a Canucks fan, because you want the player valued for what he's worth. And this is a top 20 scorer in the NHL this year. If he is indeed on the market, he is at the very least, Bick, and we talked about this a couple of days ago, at the very least, I think the lowest you can go is probably number two on the trade board. Like, Jacob Chychrun and him are the top two because they have term, they're on value deals beyond this year. So if you're talking about a player that can, A, put up a point per game, he has been a 70-point player who is trending in that exact same direction, if not, you know, above 80 points this year, and has the versatility of playing on the wing and the center position, the ask should be astronomical because there's nobody else like him on the market. You could say Claude Giroux, but what does Claude Giroux have that JT Miller doesn't in this regard? It's that he's got an expiring contract. Mm-hmm. He doesn't provide value beyond this year. JT Miller provides that. So when I hear the word astronomical used here, and that's what Jim Rutherford's asking for, stick to your guns, because you do have a player that is a bit of a hybrid right now in the NHL, and you do have some service time, an extra year that you can dangle if indeed you are shopping him. So it may be astronomical to the New York Rangers, but I think it's justified. What is that ask, though, is the big question, right? Are we talking about three pieces? Are we talking about four pieces? That is the real question here.
The other interesting part of this, and the reason why you want to play this game if you're Jim Rutherford, is, yeah, okay, set an astronomical price. The only team we've been linking JT Miller to, by and large, is the New York Rangers. Now, Frank Saravelli reported earlier this week, hey, look, we spend a lot of time talking about the Rangers because the interest is high from New York. It's not as if there aren't other teams involved in this. He mentioned Minnesota. He mentioned Calgary. You know, you go around this league right now, Randy. A, obviously, JT Miller could help a lot of teams. Let's be real. The way he's playing right now, the manner in which he's improved his stock, the Vancouver Canucks, if they execute a trade on JT Miller, are going to get a massive return on investment from what they put in, right? They are going to get a lot of assets given what they gave up a couple of years ago. You go around the league, though. Who stands out to you as maybe creating this auction? Because there's a difference between having interest and actual offers and creating a real auction. If the Vancouver Canucks create an auction around the league, how should they go about this? And what other teams should they try to manipulate for this?
Yeah, because this is Vancouver, we have to kind of come with a real estate example. Hey, you might be interested in buying a place, but who has the savings? Who has the line of credit to actually make it happen is the other question, right? And there are certain teams in the NHL that have those cash assets, that have, you know, the line of credit, if you want to call it, the prospects to make a deal like this happen. You mentioned the Rangers. They are absolutely in the mix. They've got young players. They've got young players in the forward group. They've got young players on the back end. Nils Lundqvist is a player that we've talked about a lot on this show and what he could offer the Canucks in an area of need, which is defense and specifically the right side of defense. But let's zoom away from the Rangers for a second and talk about those other interested parties, those other interested bidders. Minnesota is an interesting one because I think if you're looking at young players, they haven't. Matthew Boldy is the one that pops up because I don't think they're doing anything with a Marco Rossi, but Matthew Boldy is potentially a player you'd look at and say, all right, this is a guy that, you know, plays on the wing. He is a former first round pick. He's already made his NHL debut. He is somebody that could jump up into the lineup immediately. The problem with Minnesota, though, Vic, do they have the cap room?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know Minnesota is rumored to be interested, but Are you taking back cap space going the other way? Can they even actually make this work for a JT Miller? And I'm not so sure on the Minnesota Wild front.
It's next year which really becomes the issue, right? We know that the $12 million dead cap kicks in for Suter and Parise. That's when it really becomes an issue because you're adding money on the back end for next year's salary. I think they could make it work this year, but you'd have to take a contract back. But it's to what level is Minnesota a viable target because of what their cap looks like next year? Here's my issue though, Randy, and we'll do this exercise throughout the course of the show. We'll pitch it to Urfangafar coming up here. You can chime in with your trade thoughts as well. 650-650 is what are the two biggest organizational deficits right now? It's right-handed D and I would say center. Does someone like Matt Boldy check either of those boxes? And that's my issue is he might be a better talent than Nils Lundqvist, and I would argue at the worst case scenario he is on par. Okay, and I probably like Nils Lundqvist more than a lot of people, but it's very very close between those guys. But let's just say you live in a world where you love Matt Boldy. It's still not solving what your organizational need is. I don't know if you can go through this process and only do it for just the best talent.
Yeah. So
unless it's overwhelming, unless we're talking someone that you just can't say no to. I feel like I could say no to Matt Boldy in relation to someone like Nils Lundqvist.
Yeah, if you're a part of that bidding process and you got a right shot D and a left winger in question, you're going to be trending towards hopefully the best player possible. But if it's something that you see as level or pretty close to it, right shot D, as we know in this market, is a very difficult thing to find. The Canucks haven't been able to find it for some time now, right? You overpay for it with Tyler Myers, and we can go down the Travis Hamonic and Tucker Poolman road and all of that. We know that in this market. When you're talking about center, though, center does provide you a few more options in the market. One team that has been linked to JT Miller in the last few days, the Calgary Flames. And if I look at that prospect pool, I'm not all that impressed other than center, first-round pick, Connor Zary. This is a guy that is, a center. He has played coming up in the WHL as well. This is, an individual that is playing now in Stockton in the AHL. So he's kind of getting that pro experience. But if you're talking about if Calgary can offer anything, they do have a young prospect at the center position. So if you're talking about area of need, that's one player I look at. The other one, Vic, and this one is the exciting one. If Colorado is in a position to actually add to their lineup right now, which they are, they have the cap room. If they want to add a winger / center and have a little bit of protection in case Nazem Kadri leaves for UFA status, which he probably will because he can probably command at least $7 to $8 million based on the season that he's having, JT Miller is really valuable to a team like Colorado who has security going beyond this year. Alex Newhook is the player I look at. And I say, you're talking about centers? Newhook is the guy that I would probably circle at the top of my list to say, if Colorado is interested, which they haven't necessarily been linked, but if they are, Vic, that's the player that I'm saying, yep, I want in Vancouver if that JT Miller deal is happening.
Okay, I want to pitch this to you about Calgary, and we'll talk about this on the other side too, though. Because people have a lot of fear of trading in division, right? I generally subscribe to an idea of what's the biggest package. I don't necessarily care where the player ends up. And it's the old, Tyler Toffoli thing of, well, if you trade him in division, he's going to burn you. It's like, who cares? You should be worried about building your own house, not worrying about what the neighbors are doing. If you can make your house look nice, it'll look better than the neighbors in the long run. So if you charge the in-division tax to Calgary, and maybe that means one more asset, Randy.
Yep.
Is that something that's more attractive?
I think so. But here's the thing with the Calgary Flames. If we're ranking which team needs JT Miller, which team may be more desperate than others, I am definitely looking at the Calgary Flames because that is what they're missing in their group right now. Elias Lindholm is a very good player. He can play on the wings and center. Michael Backlund, go through that list of players. Sean Monahan, him being essentially a third, fourth liner, really hurt them when it comes to their center depth. They do need another option in their top six forward group. And if they can get a center or a hybrid player that can play on both sides, that's an individual that I look at and say, all right, you know, that's a team that I look at and say, if there's a team that will buckle to the astronomical price tag that Jim Rutherford is potentially doing, it's within division. That hurts. It's maybe another former Canuck in Calgary, but Vic, it is like they are desperate right now because they do feel like they're that team that's willing to go all in for the next little bit.
Vic Nizar, Randy Janda here. We're going to do wrong answers only on the other side of the break because we wanted to get to one more story that a lot of people have been tracking here in this city, obviously. The Jake Virtanen story took another step today as the Crown did charge him with sexual assault in relation to the incident that we've talked about before. It happened in 2017. He was obviously here a member of the Vancouver Canucks. The VPD launching their investigation last May. And the now 23-year-old victim, after she went to police. So Virtanen is not in custody, obviously. He's over in Russia. And I believe Patrick Johnson reported that his court date was supposed to be for today. This is just the next step in this whole process here, Randy. You wait to play it out, but today was another development in the whole investigation and the whole case.
Absolutely, and it's you know, something that has been asked of the Canucks leadership for the last number of months. Now there is some clarity on where this is headed. It's headed towards the courts, and as of earlier today, Patrick Johnson reported that the Crown told him that Jake Virtanen's first court appearance has been put back to February 10th at 9 a.m. So definitely a situation to watch here. We'll see what this means in terms of extradition. Is that even being considered at this point? You know, are in-person court appearances required at this point? Because it's not, you know, you can push back court appearances. The attorney can appear on behalf of the client sometimes as well in order to push back those appearances. As we know, Jake Virtanen is in Russia playing in the KHL right now. So definitely something to watch. We will keep you posted on that as well. But this is a pretty significant development in the case against Jake Virtanen and the fact that Crown has filed sexual assault charges against a former Canuck.
Vic Nizar, Randy Janda. We'll be back with more here on The People's Show and on the home of the Canucks on a Canucks game day, getting set to play the Winnipeg Jets here, all upcoming on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is The People's Show with Vic Nizar and Randy Janda.
Welcome back to the show. Vic Nizar, Randy Janda here on The People's Show. We skipped over in the first segment, but let's get to it right now. If you missed the story today, the Arizona Coyotes, Randy, working on a plan to play in a 5,000-seat arena at ASU.
They're going back to school.
It's like Billy Madison, back to school to prove to Bettman that we're not fools.
Doesn't it sound like a bad movie, like Ernest Goes Back to School or something like that? That's what this Coyotes franchise has become, an Ernest
movie. They are Ernest. So it is the subject of our wrong answers only. Where will the Arizona Coyotes play next season? Because I'm not sure if a 5,000-seat arena is a fantastic idea. And we'll talk about it later on in the show. I don't necessarily hate the idea. I hate the way they're going about it.
Yeah, if there was like a roadmap of, hey, this is going to happen first, and then we've got the land and we're starting to build, it makes sense. But guess what, Vic? They don't have the land. They're dealing in a land of like unicorns and, you know, like it's a fantasy world still in Arizona. And I don't like that, man. But today's wrong answers only. Where will the Coyotes play next season? Wrong answers only.
650, chime in with your thoughts.
I got one.
Wrong answers only. Yeah, fire away.
Atlanta. We know they have an arena.
Hey, now.
Bring back the Thrashers experience. Atlanta's a different city. They've got infrastructure there. Make it happen.
Why not even go further back? Just say Atlanta Flames. Really annoy Calgary.
Just get rid of the Thrashers history and go back. Yeah. Okay.
Because the reason I don't want the Thrashers is because I really like the Atlanta Thrashers parody account on Twitter.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So if you bring back the real Thrashers, it's like, well, that account just not it's just not the same anymore. And why not just kind of adopt the CFL way? Just okay, have two teams with the same name. It's fine. It's totally fine. We know Atlanta is different from Calgary. And it's another reason to annoy one of the Canucks' neighbors.
The Atlanta Rough Riders. How does that sound? I like that.
Good. I mean, you can go to Hartford. Why not do that?
Hartford, yeah. I like how we're all ignoring Quebec City when that team is just, like, crying for a team.
Well, this is wrong answers only.
It's true.
Randy.
That would be too right of an answer. Houston, we're not even considering that because that's actually a right answer.
No. 650. Well, your wrong answers only. Where will the Arizona Coyotes play next season? We'll get to those submissions in just a little bit. But first, we'll talk to Irfan Ghaffar, fourth period Canucks insider. What's going on, man?
The Arizona Coyotes are going to play in Surrey.
There we go. Now we're talking. Love it.
Yeah, why not? Langley Event Center? There's some spots.
No.
At Planet Ice. At Planet Ice off of...
We're going Newton Athletic Center.
An outdoor rink at the Newton Athletic Park. I like it.
There we go. Right in the heart of Surrey.
So, busy week for the Canucks. Busy, like, 10 days. It has been nonstop for them, hiring all these people, trade rumors, COVID protocols, everything that's going on right now. The last, 10 days, and realistically, the GM hire and the back-end hires as well, Rachel Dorey and Emily Castlegay, what impression do you think this has made on the rest of the league with these moves Jim Rutherford has made?
Well, I think if you talk to anyone that's involved in hockey and in the hockey world, they'll look at this front office of the Vancouver Canucks organization and be thoroughly impressed with what Jim Rutherford has done. And I think that from an ownership perspective, that's exactly what they needed. Emily Castonguay talked about, the team and the organization wanting to have an absolute culture change. And that's kind of what you're seeing right now, to be completely honest. And it always starts at the top down. With Francesco Aquilini to who he hired and Jim Rutherford to who he hires as his GM and Patrick Alvin. And obviously he was the latest hire, but the hires that they did before that can also attribute to what they want to do and what they want to accomplish. And I think the culture change and having stability and people knowing what they're doing and things like that is going to work very well for this organization in the long term. Look, we might not see the changes on the ice reflect right away about what this management group and things want to do. But we saw what Emily Castonguay had to say today, how they want to be a perennial contender and how they want to build a winning culture and see that. And it's been a long time since fans have seen that here in Vancouver and also even people covering the team. So I like the hires, obviously. It's been a very positive storyline for the Canucks over the last little while. I mean, just the COVID stuff has been a little bit negative. But all in all, I think if the Canucks are in the news right now for what they're doing off the ice and they're nailing every single hire, this is a good thing.
Yeah, and it's easy to say the right things, but, sometimes we say talk is cheap, but I can tell you one thing. These moves are not cheap, right? You have to spend money to get Jim Rutherford. You have to build out your front office. And they did let people go as well, which also comes with a cost. Let's not forget that as well. You have to, pay out contracts. So I think the fact that the ownership group has gone to, bring in the heaviest of hitters in the NHL, free agency-wise, which was Jim Rutherford, and now you're building out a bigger front office, and that's not going to change here. That scouting department is probably going to see some changes. Hockey operations, it's a real signal of intent by this ownership group, which has been, let's be real, heavily criticized in this market, but as of right now, there's progress on this front.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, and the biggest thing around here is I don't even think they're done yet.
Yep.
To be completely honest, I think there's still one or two more hires in the front office, and I think there's going to be some decisions that are going to be made in the scouting department as well. We might see those further down the road around the draft time and things like that, but they're definitely not done. I think there's people that are working for organizations or that are doing different things right now that Patrick Alvin does want to speak with and want to talk to. And you obviously know that Jim Rutherford mentioned Ryan Johnson's name as a potential to have maybe an elevated role. We're not entirely sure what that might look like. But look, it's a positive situation when you have alignment in your front office and people know what they're doing. And then everyone's got a job. The analytic department knows what they're doing. The player development side knows what they're doing. The cap people know what they're doing. And the people making the trades and making the phone calls and answering the phones about possible trades, they know what they're doing. So the players see that, and it reflects on ownership that, finally it gets to a point now where they have the right people in place, and, you hope that the results on the ice will follow soon enough.
So what does that mean for then, Patrick Alvin and when this timeline might happen for some transactions? He steps in the job yesterday, and immediately, today, JT Miller's name gets resurfaced. Do you get a sense of what a timeline might look like for any transactions?
I think that Jim Rutherford is definitely has his eye on what he feels that this team needs. I think Bruce Boudreau definitely has his eye on what he feels this team needs. And it's time now for Patrick Alvin, maybe to have these next couple of weeks to look at this team. And I'm sure he obviously watched from afar when his buddy Jim Rutherford got the job and things like that. And you heard his name come out about like a month ago about being a potential front runner, but now the job's his, right? And now he's in charge and he needs to look at this team and evaluate it and sees what their best, their biggest issues are. And if it is trading JT Miller or things like that, then, you know, he's the one that's going to field the calls and you know, work alongside Jim Rutherford and try and make moves like that happen. But I don't know. Look, if someone calls with a trade or a trade request or a trade offer that absolutely blows something out of the water, you know, it's not going to take a long time for these guys to make moves. And I've mentioned before that, you know, people shouldn't be surprised if moves are made are big. And I think that that's something that, you know, this organization needs. You have to move money somewhere at some point. You have to sign your captain. You have to sign Brock Besser at some point here over the next couple of seasons. And you've got to decide where this JT Miller situation is going. If he's going to end up on another team or if he's going to end up re-signing here, it's all up in the air right now. So it's one of those times where you look at it as a Canucks fan and you don't want to lose your best player and you don't want to see guys leaving and things like that. But with this front office and the people that are in charge right now, I'd be excited.
Well, one thing is for sure that Jim Rutherford, Patrick Alvin, they do have a long-term view on this. Not to say it's a rebuild, but they are looking at, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road and building with this core. So when we talk about a JT Miller deal potentially, you know, Larry Brooks out in the New York Post mentioned today that apparently the Canucks ask is astronomical, which is, I'm glad to hear that because you've got a top 30 score in JT Miller in the NHL this year, and that's exactly what you want. But when we start considering packages, you know, we were kind of spitballing a little bit earlier, Irf, but you're looking at, you know, it doesn't strike me as any package for JT Miller is going to be centered around a really young prospect that is not in the NHL. It feels like with where Rutherford and Alvin want to go with this team in a year or two, they want somebody that, if it's a young player, that is pretty much NHL ready, if not already playing in the NHL.
Well, you gave up a first-round pick for him, so you probably want to get that back as well.
Yep.
At some point, right? So, and that's just that. That's just probably the start. So, the reason, I mean, for you see the Larry Brooks article and saying the ask is astronomical, it's probably a good thing. You know, you have to know what your players are worth. And JT Miller's a point of game guy right now. He's been the best Canuck for the last couple of years, you know, other than obviously Thatcher Demko, who's been very good this season as well, and other players. But it's really this team is as gone as far as JT Miller has taken them. And we talk about Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes so much, but, you know, we all know the season that Elias Pettersson having, and Quinn Hughes, obviously, you know, he's Quinn Hughes, but JT Miller is, like I said before, he's the heartbeat of this team. And when you have that and you have teams that are interested in his services, you have to know his worth and you have to know what his worth is for your roster as well. And I think that the biggest thing for this team is, like you mentioned, it's not a rebuild. We don't want to use that word. They don't want to use that word, but you have to realize that your core three or four players right now, they're not going to get any younger. Their window is wide open right now, and eventually it's going to get to a point in the next couple of years where that window is going to slip a little bit. So you have to surround your Elias Petterssons, your Quinn Hughes, and your Thatcher Demkos with the best talent to get the best out of them. And I think that if that involves a trade for a player that's already established in the National Hockey League, you have to do that, or it involves having to buy someone out and do things like that. They're definitely looking at every single avenue.
Well, that's what's so fascinating, too, is because, again, I'm very much on record saying, hey, you still have to push to succeed. I don't want to see this major teardown in rebuild because you have certain talents. So how deep could this roster surgery go? We spend a lot of time talking about Miller and Besser, but, you know, guys like Myers, guys like Dickinson, they have tickets, big tickets here, and still could have value to other teams across the league, but that age range really matters here. How deep could this roster surgery go?
Well, look, I think that I mentioned before, I think there's few players that are quote-unquote untouchables on this roster, and I think we all know who they are. Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, and Thatcher Demko. And beyond that, you need to do what you can to try and improve your team, but we're in a cap world, too, as well. So you heard Jim Rutherford mention that, you know, they want to move some money. Patrick Alvin, they want to move some money out. So how are you going to do that? You obviously have to do it via trade, right? Or are you going to try and buy somebody out? But you look at the way that the Myers contract is, and you look at guys like Dickinson and these guys, it just doesn't make sense to buy these types of players out. So are you eating salary in forms of enticing other teams of the way that you're going to trade players and things like that? So I just think that, you know, there's a lot to take into consideration, but the one good thing is that whatever we're thinking about, members of the media and whatever, you know, if the fan base is thinking about, let me tell you right now, in that front office, they're thinking about it 10 times more, and they have way more ideas than we do right now.
Irv, to follow up the report you had a little bit earlier on today, Evander Kane in Edmonton, we have some financial details on that from Frank Saravalli as well. $1 million for this year. The cap charge will be double that, essentially, for Edmonton for the rest of the year. When you talk about the decision of going to Edmonton, you know, Evander Kane, like, what was the selling point here? Is it simply down to Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, a chance to win, or was there more to this decision?
I think for him, it was there was four teams, and then there was two, and it was Washington and Edmonton that were the last two teams. And I think for him, the biggest thing was, you know, getting a chance to play with Connor McDavid, getting a chance to play with Zach Hyman. That's probably going to be that line. It's going to be Hyman, McDavid, Kane, which isn't a bad line if you're telling me. But I think for Evander Kane, you know, you look at it right now, you look at this Oilers team, and obviously we all talk about the goalie, and they need a goalie, and they need defensemen, but he will provide a spark of offense to that team. Obviously, we talk about the dressing room and things like that. That's going to, whatever happens, happens. If it's a good room, then, you know, you're going to see what happens there. But I think for Evander, it's just go back and play hockey. And for the Edmonton Oilers, it's, do they see a fit here? And they obviously do. I know Evander met with Dave Tippett and Ken Holland when they were here the other day. Apparently the meeting was very good. And obviously you see the contract here. And, you know, we knew that, you know, Edmonton was a place that he wanted to go. And look, playing with Connor McDavid for any player in the National Hockey League, and if you're not, it's probably pretty enticing. So I think that the decision was made a while ago for Evander to go there. I'm pretty sure he's in Edmonton already, so they're going to get the deal done if the deal's not already done. And we saw the numbers come out you just mentioned. So he could play this weekend on Saturday. I wouldn't be shocked if he played on Saturday.
Talking to Irfan Gafar, fourth period, from the fourth period in Canucks Insider. Big match tonight. Psyched?
Yeah, it is a big one. That building, you know, if you talk to Arash Madani, he was there when they lost 8-2. That's the match we're talking about, right? Or 8-1?
Yeah.
Bags of urine being thrown onto the pitch, Irv. Come on.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, bags of everything. Yeah, no, you know what? It's wild, but he tells it, like, it's incredible of what the atmosphere is like. Like, there's only so many things that you can imagine and see, but until you live it and you're there, it's crazy. And then you're talking to players that were there during that time at that game, and players that have played in the past and gone to these, you know, South American countries and different countries around the globe to play and in these hostile environments. You definitely know and see how passionate they are about soccer and how they want to make your life a living hell. So for the Canadians, they're young. Obviously no Davies, but you know, it's exciting. It's an exciting time for Canadian soccer. And I think that's the biggest thing is when you look at this team, the BBC, you know, did a story today. Everyone should check it out. It's about how the Canadian soccer is a sleeping giant. And, you know, this is the BBC coming out and saying this about Canada and the Canadian men's national team. And I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before. So it's an exciting time if you're a soccer fan in this country. You know, hopefully they can pull it out tonight.
Just give us one name because we're going to do this later on in the show. Because you mentioned no Davies. Who are you looking at tonight then?
Tayshaun Buchanan.
Yep.
Yeah, he's got to have a good game. I mean, I don't know if he's in the starting lineup, but he's got to have a good game.
All right, we'll see what the lineup looks like. And sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. That's fine.
Well, hey, who do you got this weekend?
Okay, from one football to the other, who do you got this weekend, Beck?
Rams and Chiefs. Or no, sorry, 49ers and Chiefs.
Ooh, going against the Rams. All right.
I'm going Rams and buy Bengals, buy points on the Bengals.
Oh, if we're talking about the spread here, I actually, to be honest, I didn't even look what the Chiefs spread is. Is it 7?
Yeah.
Look at that. I just pulled that out of thin air. Okay, awesome. I might take the Bengals at 7. But as far as who's advancing the Super Bowl, I'll go Chiefs and 49ers.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to go Rams and Chiefs.
I'm with you, Irv. I think Rams, Chiefs.
Go figure, Randy.
And then Mahomes loses in the Super Bowl again.
Don't overthink it, Vic. Don't overthink
it. Yeah, fair enough. Irv, thanks a lot, man.
All right, boys, be well.
That is Canucks Insider from the fourth period, Irfan Gafar. So you're just taking the favorites, eh?
No, I'm not going to lie, I've had a crush on the Rams all year long, so this is kind of confirming what I think. Although the Niners are a bad matchup for them, I think the Rams are hitting their form. The Chiefs, man, we said they were dead and buried earlier this year. they just know how to turn it up. So, yeah, I guess I am. In this matchup, I am taking both of the favorites.
650-650, your submission's coming in for wrong answers only. Let's do this here. Where will the Arizona Coyotes play next season? A lot of good submissions coming in here, Randy.
We got this one, unsigned. The Coyotes will be playing in Tijuana, Mexico. We talk about intimidating places to play. Tijuana is not exactly the top five of tourist destinations in Mexico these days. It's an intimidating place.
Grow the game, though. Grow the game.
It's true. Okay, I went to my parents, and take this as you may. When I was 4 years old, my sister was seven, they took us on a road trip that went through Tijuana. In our brand new car, and we just drove into Tijuana. It was, I don't know how, Tijuana in the early 90s, you know, those whole Narcos,
the
Narcos seasons? Tijuana's pretty front and center, so I lived through that, man. We spent 4 hours, 5 hours in Tijuana and came straight back.
Our family did that too in 94.
Same year, yep.
We may have ran into each other.
We were the two Punjabi families rolling through Tijuana. Hey, look at that.
Were you there the summer of 94?
Yes.
Dude, we may have run into each other. That is wild. I remember being there, though, because we went there during the 94 World Cup. And either Mexico had just been eliminated or the U.S. had just been eliminated. And there was a crazy party in the middle of the street. And we're driving. Again, we family drove down in a Cadillac. I don't know why, but we're driving in Tijuana in a Cadillac. And people are jumping over the car. Okay. It is chaos. We have no idea what's happening.
Okay, you know what? And, I just redid the math. We were actually there a couple of years earlier than that, 91. So there you go.
Okay.
So we got there a couple of years before that.
So that's why I was like, oh, the Janda family already came through here. We gotta mess up the car for the Nazar family.
They survived. It can't be that bad. We got this one from Rager. Wrong answers only. The PNE Agrodome, because their team plays like the venue smells.
I like this unsigned one. Batman's backyard. Hey, that's your pet project? Keep the pet in the backyard.
It's true. And by the time this is said and done, the NHL could probably own the Coyotes yet again. You know how this story ends? It's either the current ownership group figures it out, or they essentially, the league takes over again.
I like this one from Kyle from the island. Ryan Kessler's backyard. We saw Kessler's house. It looked massive. He's got that lake there right up front. He can do it.
He's probably got enough. We got here another unsigned text. Wrong answers only. The Coyotes are going to be playing in the Diamondback Stadium next year. Next to the
diamonds
little hot tub?
Diamonds on diamonds?
Next to the hot tub.
Zoolander's Learning Center for Ants from Mike and Tawasin.
Great. Great reference. I like this one from Gatsby. First-time texter, by the sounds of it. Since the NHL loves its outdoor show, Arizona should play nothing but outdoor games in Anchorage, Alaska next year. Sign me up. Let's go.
That'd be a bit different. I'm here for it. This one, on top of the Vancouver Convention Center from Doug in Port Moody. And Disneyland. We got a Disneyland reference here as well.
Okay. I love this one, unsigned. The Coyotes will play in a Surrey home sold by Robbie Johal. You damn right. Shouts to Robbie, the captain.
That is awesome. Colin Richmond, last one here for now. We'll get to more as we continue here. Should play at Yuck Yucks because their team is a joke.
I like that.
All right. Keep the thought. Wrong answers only coming in. We'll get into more of the conversation. Also bring you Boost Brujo's presser and that JT Miller conversation. We'll continue on the other side here. A lot of interest across the league. Is there a dream package that you might want? 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. All coming up here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.